Welcome to WBAI, Walden Bellow. First of all, I want to start with your evaluation of the World Social Forum in Porto Alegre. How'd it go this year?
You had quite a successful forum. I think the numbers of those attending came to over about 100,000. The range of and numbers of seminars and topics on a whole range of issues was really quite impressive. Some of the high points was, of course, included Lula's address. It was almost inevitable that, you know, since the Workers' Party had played such a central role in bringing the World Social Forum together, that, you know, a lot of the attention was put on Lula. A number of people were disconcerted, including myself, when prior to the forum he said that he was going to Davos, World Economic Forum meeting, to act as a link between Davos and Porto Alegre. And that was something that didn't go down too well. I thought he was retreating from that in a meeting that we had with him when he told us that he was going to speak the truth at Davos. But apparently, he again said while at Davos that he wanted to serve as a link. So I think that that sort of controversy, if one can call it that, inflected some people's opinions of the forum. But in my sense, that overall it was quite good. And the big thing, of course, that a number of people were looking for was to see if there was a accumulation of experiences between the first, second, and the third social forum. And although the organizers tried to provide some mechanisms by which that accumulation of experience could be provided for, I don't think that was too successful. But again, this is a very young forum, and I think that in terms of the three functions that I think the WSF plays, one is to serve as a place where people can affirm their solidarity. Second is to plan out future activities to try to roll back the processes of global capitalism. And three, discussion of alternatives. I think that those objectives were pretty much met this year.
Now, as you say, one of the purposes of the forum is not merely to sketch out, but even to live a kind of alternative future. So let's mm-hmm. look at some of those principles. What are people trying to do through the social forum, like sort of develop a foretaste of a better world? I mean, what are the organizing principles that try to go beyond the oppressive and hierarchical present?
As you can probably sense, the forum has provided a space for you know, all sorts of different grassroots movements throughout the world to come together to try to work out and sketch the principles of the alternative. I think one very important effort during the forum was something called the solidarity economy, which people who had been working on what they call the principles of the solidarity economy for several years now came together and organized across the plenaries, seminars, and workshops of the forum quite a number of groups that revolve around the same problems of how to build the solidarity economy as an alternative to the current system of local, national, and global economy. So those were pretty much calling for an alternative to be really grassroots-based and built from the ground up and built on barely emphatically on principles that were non-market principles, including, you know, the importance of community, the importance of the principle of subsidiarity, and the principles of equality and justice, so that those would be sort of the guiding principles that would act as checks on the market. So that's that sort of cooperative process carried out through the 7 days of the forum is yielding what is going to be a very interesting sort of synthesis of discussions that the organizers of the solidarity economy theme of the forum were going to make available. This was an effort to try now to pull things together, and that it is a sort of an international effort that quite a number of grassroots groups throughout the world, in Latin America, in Europe, and in Asia, had been working on for a number of years, and they used the forum as an effort to try to bring themselves together, bring more people into the network, and to try to consolidate both their theoretical and practical thinking on this matter. So it wasn't just many disparate groups with many disparate ideas coming together, but now there's a more organized, there was a more organized effort by a range of grassroots groups to try to bring their experiences together and to move forward. We have the basic principles of the alternative, and it is now time to try to consolidate and bring together our experiences so that, you know, we can move forward in further discussions. You know, that was, I think, one feature of this forum that I didn't see in the first two fora.
Well, let's put some flesh in this, though. I mean, you know, we have the United States government, of course, is enormously powerful. There are international institutions, the IMF, the WTO, the World Bank. There are also international capital markets. How do these sort of even globally networked grassroots groups come up against this kind of power and confront it or challenge it?
I may be mistaken, but my impression was that the, you know, hoping that the IMF and the World Bank and the WTO could somehow be reformed. That was really not, you didn't have many groups speaking for that in this forum. You had to find ways of either decommissioning or disempowering these institutions in order to be able to allow the sort around alternatives to move forward. So, you know, I think that you know, there is a sense that the only way one could move forward is this, if this institution got out of the way. So although sort of the highly dramatic posing of, you know, reform versus dismantlement that characterized the initial stages of debate, that things were not posed as dramatically that way, I think that the essence of most of the discussions was that efforts to reform these institutions were really getting nowhere, and that thinking about alternatives, you could not help but also engage in the process of really trying to disempower these institutions. So concrete ways of doing that, I think, with respect to the WTO, I think there's a fairly widespread unity now that the important thing is to make sure that the WTO does not gain more powers, and that there's a strong sense that across the board there should be a widespread mobilization to derail the ministerial of the WTO in Cancun, in Mexico. When it came to campaigns, my sense was that among the international financial institutions, it was the WTO that was, you know, getting, you know, the focus of the effort to address the global economic system or the system of global economic governance, and that was, and that there was a great opportunity this year precisely because of the Cancun ministerial. So I would say that there was a sense that, you know, that Seattle was a victory, Doha ministerial, the fourth ministerial was a defeat, and that people had to come together in order to repeat a Seattle in Mexico this year. So very little talk about reform. very strong alienation and a focused campaign directed at the World Trade Organization.
Let's dream a little bit. You know, like say we do manage to contain, if not eliminate, these institutions. What would a country, say, like yours, the Philippines, do in this newer world? I mean, what kind of development strategies do you foresee? Is this something like a reprise of 1950s, 1960s style national development strategies, or something newer than that?
With respect to some of the principles building up national and local economies, I really don't think people are talking about going back to the 1950s import substitution strategies. I think there is a sense that countries should be able to engage in strategic economic policy making through and through the control and the use of trade policy and through the use of protectionism, for instance. But I would say that whereas in the 1950s, 60s strategies, you had a very strong focus on industry, I think now people are talking about reinvigorating agriculture. People are talking about reinvigorating countryside with the reinvigoration of smallholder agriculture. And people are putting sustainable development in terms, in terms of economic models that, in fact, are very congenial to the environment at the very center of the alternative. So, and also, I think, in terms of the contributions of feminist economics, around the reconstruction of national economies, I think those are being absorbed into this process of alternative thinking at this point. Clearly, there is a sense that that sort of innovation, that sort of creating new economies based on the principles of the priority of community and solidarity and equity and justice, none of that can take place unless you really had a significant change at the global level, which meant, among other things, disempowering transnational corporations, making sure transnational corporations are not part of any sort of domestic, economic process, and weakening and disempowering the institutions that set the rules for transnationals. So there is a sense, of course, that there have been some advances when it comes to things like local currency systems, fair trade, microcredit schemes, but there is a sense that real effective innovation of this sort is not going to take place unless you really had also simultaneously a real break at the global level with the dominant institutions, because a sense that this sort of innovations will not be permitted by the institutions of global capitalism to take place.
It's of course, the meeting was happening in Brazil, and just as Lula had become president, and the early moves of Lula's government have been fairly orthodox, and I think disappointing to many of his fans and supporters. What are your thoughts on what the early Lula government is looking like?
Well, I think my sense is that they're in a very tight spot. They very little room for maneuver when it came to the debt question, and with respect to some of the what they call the macroeconomic conditions that had been laid. That had been agreed to by the previous Cardoso government, because there was, the threat of massive capital flight in order to destabilize Lula's coming to power was really there. In the months leading to the elections, they very deliberately downplayed any major changes with respect to their ability to be able to to either abandon or to renegotiate the conditionalities that the Cardoso government had agreed to. At the same time, I think that there is some space that they're looking at. One space is in agriculture. They feel that in cooperation with groups like the landless movement, the MST, that agrarian reform can be speeded up. And part of this process, of course, the fact that over the last few decades, the rural oligarchy has become quite isolated, and its ability to be able to connect up with other factions of the Brazilian elite to stop significant change in the countryside, that's weakened. So my sense is that they're looking at a major push when it comes to the transformation of agrarian relations. I think the other thing that they're also looking at is making sure that the FTAA, with its very draconian rules, that would prevent them from undertaking any sort of independent strategic industrial policy, that they appear, it appears like they will be making a very tough stand against approving any trade agreement that you know, that eliminates their ability to be able to use protectionism and to be able to use industrial policy and to do strategic economic planning. The U.S., in fact, is quite worried about right now about the Brazilians' insistence or stubbornness along this line. Then there is, of course, the Lula government's focus in the first year on what it calls ending hunger, and sort of, you know, the idea of getting an international Marshall Plan to, you know, to support this massive effort to end hunger in Brazil. They know that in the first year that it's going to be really tough, that in some areas they really, they have their hands tied. But their hope is that if they can get the economy reignited and some significant growth begins, then that will sort of open up the space for them to take more radical moves when it comes to relations with international financial institutions and dealing with the debt. Now, that of course means that a number of groups, social groups, including say public sector workers, whose salaries have pretty much remained at the same level for I believe the last 15 years, and who had expected that with the coming of the Lula government there could be a chance or a big push for wage raises, that there will be some disappointment. And I think that that is now the source of discussions between the Lula government and the unions. As one former labor leader told me, Lula is going to be given a honeymoon, but that that honeymoon period is not going to last very long. So I think what they're trying to do is to, one, move on agriculture. Two is oppose the FTAA. Three is have this end hunger program as those three things to buy time in the first year. And once the economy gets going, to be sharper in their challenge to the international financial institutions and the banks and the IMF. What gives me confidence, though, is that this is really not this is really not a middle class sort of intelligentsia led government that is undertaking populist policies. I think this is a real grassroots, mass based government that came up from the people, that is making tactical concessions, but seems to me that strategically has its eyes on final objectives. The mass movements are, even in the first year, I think they will constantly be pushing, you know, to enlarge the space for reform, and that the government will need to respond to that.
Well, we're just about out of time, but one final question.
Sure.
Any thoughts on how to cut back or control the imperial power of the United States?
Well, Doug, I think that, you know, although it seems like the U.S. at this point, you know, seems to be unchallenged. In fact, I would say that, you know, it is committing this disease of all empires, which is to become overextended. I would say that if one looks at some of the developments over the last year, which is the inability of the United States to impose a Pax Americana on Afghanistan, the fact that throughout the Arab world and throughout the Muslim world, what you've had is a qualitatively deepened disaffection with the United States, leading to the possibilities of more radical governments taking place, taking power all over the area. And third is the rift between Western Europe and the United States, which I think is quite significant and could mean the end of the Atlantic Alliance. And finally, the fact that key components of the anti-corporate globalization movement have, in fact, come to state power in Latin America, such as the Lula government, as well as the new government in Ecuador, and one might even say the Chavez government, while the U.S. has been obsessed with the Middle East, this revolt against neoliberalism has been taking place in its backyard. So in other words, what I think is that the picture is not all that bleak. In fact, I would say that the overextension of the United States is a very real problem at this point. One must look at the situation that has been happening with global capitalism, which is that, as you yourself have written on a couple of times, the contradictions of finance capital, the crisis of overproduction, and now the whole series of scandals that have called into question the legitimacy of global capitalism. I think that if you factor in all of that, I think it would be very hard to make a case that things are going the United States way. Another extremely significant thing, of course, has been this birth of an anti-war movement, which has really blended with the anti-corporate globalization movement at this point. So I think people are, in fact, fighting back, and the future is in the balance, and I don't think that the signs point to the ability of the United States to be able to impose its will without any resistance.
All right, well, that sounds like a good note to end on. Thanks for joining us, Walden.